When I was a young boy, my father took me into the city to see a marching band. He said, son, when you grow up, would you be the savior of the broken, the beaten, and the damned? He said, will you defeat them, your demons and all the non-believers, the plans that they have made? Because one day I'll leave you a phantom to lead you in the summer to join the Black Parade.
Thomas Paine Podcast, a special presentation. Interesting one for you, to say the least, and kind of an emotional roller coaster. For myself, as I reach back with somebody I've known almost 40 years, and we sit down with them, a Pennsylvania native, a really, really smart guy. I mean, this guy majored in criminal justice in college, and he could have run the FBI, he could have run whatever he wanted to run. But he chose to stay close to home, and that's a story. And this interview certainly should prompt you to think about a lot of things in your life and also about what's going on in this country. We talk about pandemics. We talk about scamdemics. We talk about CoronaCon, et cetera. And we overlook what's really going on. A serious epidemic. Opioids, something that I've wanted to roll up my sleeves on for a while. So a recent funeral, largely DEA folks. There are a number of DEA folks we used to run with back in the day. I used to run with guys who worked under John Moynihan in New York City and hadn't seen one of the guys in a while. And we were talking about fentanyl. And, of course, he's been with DEA more than 30 years. And he said they want fentanyl and everything. In other words, the users, folks that are addicts, they want fentanyl and everything. And they're putting it in everything from marijuana on down the line. And it's spilling into the country at record amounts. Nobody's really doing much about it because anything they are tasked to do or budgeted to do, in many cases, is literally Band-Aid approach. With the new administration in the White House, they're allowing the Chinese to bring this stuff into the country unabated through the Mexican cartels, and then it infects, literally infects the country, and we're destroying ourselves from the inside out with the help of communists and criminals like we have in the White House and Washington, D.C., who see no problem with it until it reaches their doorstep. I played college football, and I was pledged in a fraternity under a gentleman by the name of Chris Tantlinger. He's a chief at the Westmoreland County Hazardous Materials Response Team, 800 in Pennsylvania, and he's a national figure when it comes to hazmat response. Like I said, he could have run anything he wanted, but he wanted to stay close to home outside of Pittsburgh. And I caught up with him, and Tant, I call him Tant, so I'm just going to call him Tant on here, a friend of almost 40 years. He recently lost his daughter to the opioid disaster that has plagued and continues to run wild. A cancer in this country that's largely overlooked for many reasons. One, perhaps, when the purveyors of this nightmare have the president of the United States in their pocket, the Chinese. But that's a story for another day. This is a story of a family and a father who lost a daughter, and a world, a society who lost a promising young lady filled with life and all the good things you try to espouse as a parent for a child, in a child. It's been 5 years since Chris and his wife and their son lost Rachel Tantlinger to an overdose of a batch of heroin that was laced with a real strong punch of fentanyl. And, you know, I caught up a number of different times. I've seen him a number of different times in the last year at different gatherings. I saw him last summer, Chris. We got together at like a farmhouse up in the middle of Pennsylvania, a lot of fraternity guys. Turns out, too many fraternity guys. There were too many people there. It was making the landlord a little nervous, but everything was cool. And I could tell Chris was still so banged up, and I said to myself, at some point maybe I should approach him and ask him if he wants to talk about Rachel and Rachel's story. Maybe it can reach, or we can reach, or he can reach other folks who it might help, other parents. That's what you try to do as a journalist, right? I got a note. It's related in a way. From a woman a couple days ago who said, was thanking me for the reporting we did on these jabs, these pharmaceutical jabs, a year ago in February of 2021. And where I said, look, we read the white papers of these companies, and these could be a real problem if you're planning on having a family or you're pregnant. So be careful. Or if you're planning a family, remember, maybe back off. Don't rush into these things and see how they play out. And her daughter did that. She took her time, and she decided not to go the route all of her friends were going. Now her friends can't have or having big problems having babies. They're planning families, starting families, and having a hard time starting families now. And meanwhile, she just gave birth to a baby girl. So the mother was thanking me, to which I responded, did you name the kid after me? Yeah, that's great. I'm glad that I helped out, but how about throwing me a bone? So when we were on the road, I finally got up enough nerve to ask, Tan, can we sit down and talk about your daughter, Rachel, and what happened? Perhaps there's somebody out there that needs to listen or could benefit from listening to this message. In my career, I've interviewed a number of folks who've lost their kids to different tragedies. But I've never interviewed somebody I've known, respected, or cared about. Somewhat of a different take on my behalf, and it came with its own challenges, but none greater than the challenges of Tant to sit down and remain composed and talk about the... got to be the toughest thing to ever go through. And you try to get in there and figure, I could probably understand what's going on here, what this individual is going through, but you come away, at least I came away with the feeling that this level of grief isn't something that can be shared. Mothers and fathers get to carry it alone, and brothers, they get to carry it alone. And you come away with a profound realization that there is no tragedy in life like the death of your own child. And things can just simply never go back to the way they were before it. So let's talk about Rachel Tantlinger. Just like her father, who wanted to stay local and make his mark locally, she did the same. She participated and helped raise funds for the volunteer fire company, the Rotary Club, Miss Ligonier Pageant, the YMCA, and the American Cancer Society. Always ready to volunteer when someone needed another to lend a hand. The dealer who sold Rachel the tainted batch of heroin recently was just sentenced. We'll talk about that as things move on. That was in court and for a long time. And the wheels of justice grind slowly. And in this case, super slow. Especially for a parent who's looking for closure, or a brother or sibling who are looking just simply for closure. And while the drug dealer did get some prison time, it certainly was hardly enough. He faced a maximum penalty of 20 to 40 years, and instead he got one. As the judge lamented that the person, quote, the person who really should be sitting in that chair is the big dealer, unquote. The judge said at the sentencing. So we can talk to members and high-ranking officials or street agents of the Drug Enforcement Administration and local police, talk about fentanyl this and fentanyl that, and what really is happening in the country, where we can sit down and get a serious, very sobering view of what's happening and what the result is on a family and a father when a daughter dies of a drug overdose death. And strangely ironic, or perhaps macabre or prophetic or a combination of the three, that Rachel Tantlinger's favorite song was by My Chemical Romance, called Welcome to the Black Parade. We opened up with that. And certainly this real epidemic in the United States has become a black parade, a black cloud over all of us. And if we've learned one thing in the last 25 months or so, we've learned that the government is not capable of protecting our loved ones, so we have to keep an extra eye out. We have to do their job on top of everything else we have to worry about. And don't leave it to these folks, because they'll mess it up, as they have so many times. In fact, they specifically have created this nightmare. And count yourself lucky if addiction hasn't touched your life and your family. Say some prayers that it doesn't, and also say some prayers for the folks whose lives it has infected. Take care of yourself, and God bless you and your family. So, bro, I wanted to catch up with you for a long time and pick your brain, because I've been following you on Facebook and conversations and everything with what happened with your daughter. And I don't know if there's a message here for other people, because opioids is like, it's so far out of control. They talk about COVID and all these other things, but I've been keeping my eye on opioids. That's a definitive nightmare in this country. And so you're a father who has suffered fantastic turmoil and loss. I mean, it's, you know, I saw you this summer. We're hanging out this summer up at a farm in Evansburg. And I just came away with the feeling that you were just banged up, tortured, and just having a rough go of it. Was I wrong?
No, it's there every day. Yeah. Every day it's deep, it's dark, and it's empty.
Yeah.
So it really is. When you have someone's life like that, had so much potential, it just dissolved away. So it's, and you dissolve with it too. So
tell us about Rachel, your daughter.
Yeah, so she was a fantastic person. You know, the light up the room, involved in everybody and everything, always trying to make things good for people, you know, really. Yeah. Just always there, smiling and into stuff, you know. She wanted to try things, do things, always looking for some way to get the most out of life, really.
She did a lot of volunteer work.
Yeah, she was always behind the scenes with something. There would be some cause going on or an activity, and she's like, "Oh, I'm going to go help them out, and I'm going to go do that." And then always right there, 100%. So, you know, I think where things started, you know, it's always, you go back, when did this really start? And you don't know. And I think that these young kids get approached. And, you know, when we were young, we try things and do things, you know. Yeah. But I think when they're, like, young, I'm thinking, like, 12 years old. I'm thinking that, you know, in the school somewhere, somebody was like, hey, try this or whatever. And then I think that might have been her first try of something. And then she, ninth grade soccer, just goalie, fantastic. And
right.
she busted up her knee. And I think the pain got her. And I think that some pain meds took her someplace with that. And I think it just cascaded from there. And you, as a father, you're like, you know, you want to protect, and this thing just creeps in, and it's evil, and you don't know. And then I think they get involved, and they don't know what to do. And then it's a tumultuous trip that you can't. I think even if you know exactly what's going on with your kids, you may not really know. You know, we all, when we were growing up, you know, we'd do things in the background, you know, and we'd try things. And I think, you know, you think you'd see all that, but I didn't see it, and it crept up. So.
Well, we are in the same fraternity, and I pledged unto you. So we, when you say do things in the background, you know, perhaps you think our kids won't do the same kind of stuff we did because we're completely out of our minds. So maybe right. We're safe, you know, as parents, maybe we're safe because they're not going to take it up a notch or two. So, but stuff just out there happens, man. And it's,
yeah, when I was talking about 12 years old, like we were skiing and, you know, we're putting the skis on and whatever. And she was like getting really tensed up and whatever. And I'm like, what's going on here? You know? And now when I look back on it, you know, 15 years later, is like, was she like coming down from something? Did somebody gave her? And, you know, she was up at the ski slopes and whatever. And you're like, I don't understand this. And then in high school, you know, I know the kids were, you know, trying cigarettes and they were probably smoking pot and they were doing things. And you're like, you know, hey, always be the smartest one in a room. Don't be doing things, you know, and totally, I know she knew not to, but I think the opioids and then, you know, if the stuff that we tried when we were in college was laced with the stuff that's here today, you know, we'd probably be dead. You know, that's the way I look
at it. Well, yeah, some of us wouldn't be around.
Yeah.
Definitely. So. Because with fentanyl and everything else, you know, I was at a funeral, I called a DEA funeral a couple weeks ago, and talking to some DEA agents, and they just say this is, it's completely out of control, the fentanyl. And people actually want the fentanyl now. They want that extra edge.
Yeah. And it's just like, well, and they're pressing pills. Like, a lot of these people don't even know, like, it's coming, you know, the fentanyl's coming in these pressed pills that these people are making. And in my job, I see it, too. I, you know, we respond to a lot of that whenever it's, when it's pretty nasty and we've got to figure out, you know, if the coroner gets hit, the detective gets hit, and they're trying to clear the scene and whatever, and like, what's going on? We got to figure this out. And, you know, we're a part of that. So I see it all the time. And I hear every call that comes in, you know, in our county. I know when it's happening and what's going on. So I think that, it's never going to go away because it just gets deeper and darker.
You mean for you personally?
I think the kids. I think kids. Yeah. There's no way out for them. There's no way to get beyond that once they're in that funnel. You know, they can't crawl out. They can't get out. You know, talk about as we progress through this, and she went to rehabilitation, and you know, we were able to do the best in the world for her, and that turns out to be a ridiculous cycle. Some scams going on with that. She was in Florida. And
just a rehab,
yeah. And supposed to be the best, you know. Every step of the way, they were like, you know, telling you what's going on. This is what's going to happen, and living conditions and all that. And she called me one time, and she said, you know, this is nothing but a big scam. It's called the SoFlo Shuffle. I don't know if you ever heard of that.
But, yeah,
you know, they get these people to the point where they're just about pulled out of it. And then I know they've got to have people there that are jumping on them, and it brings them back into the cycle. And then they just move to another group home, and it just keeps going.
What do you mean by jump on them? They offer them drugs again?
Yeah. I think the people that are doing this have the other people on the other side, you know, just creating that continuous cycle because they know these people can't beat this. It's so deep. When she used to tell me, like, I saw a program where there was this young girl, she was talking about trying to get out of addiction, and she said, hey, you know, we smoked pot, it was like a 9 out of 10, and then we did coke, and you know, that was like a 20 out of 10, and then when we did heroin, it was like a 50 out of 10, you know, it was over the top high. And I said that to her. I said, you know, is that what it's like? I mean, I can't imagine. And she said, no, Dad. She said, it's like a 200 out of 10. She said, it's that much. And so yeah, I knew at that point that she wasn't going to be able to crawl out of that. And as we went through the continuous, there's probably 7 rehabs over the course of this, and I got to the point where all I could do is, you know, I love you and I will do whatever it takes, because it's really rough. Anybody that's going through it that has someone that's in addiction, it is the most horrible thing. It pervades every aspect of your life, you know, from the moment you get up till you go to sleep, the worry, the concern, the you don't know what's going to happen next, and there's no control. And there was the opportunity a couple times when she was even going through rehab where she was using the Suboxone, she was a zombie, and you know,
it just changes you, not even yourself.
And there was this beautiful girl with the whole world that was at 20 years old working in a legal office, writing briefs for, you know, a local attorney, and flawlessly providing, you know, stuff for him to go to court and working with the people in the office, and they loved her, and she was great and energy and all this and brilliant, and you know, we got a lot of things that could be good for her, and it just all dissolves away to, you know, in the next time that she would fall from grace, if you will, you know, as she's trying to fight it. And then you move on to another job or something else, and it just you never get any traction. So it's really, really difficult to watch.
It's like you're on a treadmill and 2 steps forward, 5 steps back, you know, that kind of thing. My old man was, when I grew up, he was, you know, did every kind of drug and couldn't get his shit together. And then he just eventually left. So when you talk about addiction, I mean, I know all about it. I grew up in that house, so.
Wow. Well, then you know.
It does. It creeps into everything. You wish you could change things and control things, but you just find yourself just a spectator, even though you don't want to be a spectator. You want to change something. You want to do something, but you find that you're basically powerless. It's very fucking. It's a very bad place to be. And then as a parent, I can't even imagine. Like, I'm talking about it from a kid's perspective of a parent, you know. But as a parent, I can't wrap my head around it. I mean, I can't. I mean, I was even afraid for a long time to ask you to sit down. Because I was like, fucking, you know, I don't know if either one of us could handle it.
Well, I had a great support structure. Everybody around me isn't in the business of law enforcement and public safety, and everybody was there. And I can't imagine a family that doesn't have that kind of support.
Yeah.
What they must go through. And I always, you know, if we're out at a scene and I see a family, you know, watching all this unfold, and they, you know, they don't have the support. And so you're like, you're trying to give them a little something to tell them, you know, I've been there. I know what you're dealing with, and, you know, try to help anytime I can. So it's a big problem. And I often think, like, what's the thing that I could do that maybe would make a difference for people to understand? And